Claudine Hemingway is a descendant of famed writer Ernest Hemingway. We bumped into each other at a party and decided to team up and dive deep into French history, but with a twist, by bringing a spotlight to those lesser-known creatives in France. This is History with a Hemingway.
Welcome back to Paris History avec Hemingway, and today we are talking about the Jardin de Luxembourg. This is going to be a multi-part series because there's so much to know about this beautiful garden, and we're kicking it off today with Claudine.
Yeah, I love the first time I came to Paris and I left to go to Italy and then was only there for 2 days, decided to go back to Paris. And this is when I discovered the Jardin de Luxembourg, and I said I would always make sure I would stay close enough to always be able to walk up there anytime I wanted to. And now I live close to there. So it is, if you have not been there, definitely add this. Most everybody has got to see this when they go to Paris. It's probably, I definitely think it's the most beautiful garden in Paris. It's just filled with everything you could possibly want. And we've talked a lot about it when we talked about Marie de Medici, I think in the first year of the podcast. So we'll link that as well, just to give you kind of the background. But this is going to be mostly about a lot of the things you will see within the garden. And so this is another great one to take with you. Go to the garden, take it with you. We're going to start on the southwest corner of the garden, which is at the Rue des SS entrance. And right when you walk into that garden, you're going to see a monument to Charles Augustin Sainte-Beuve. It was created by Denis Puch. Sainte-Beuve was an author and an art critic, but he was also close friends with Victor Hugo until he began an affair with Adele Hugo, that was Victor's wife. And we talked about that when we talked about Hugo and his mistress last year. This lasted years, and then resulting in the Hugos having an open marriage. Sainte-Beuve also lived on the Court of Commerce Saint-André, which is just there on the corner of Odéon and Saint-Germain. But Sainte-Beuve's novel, Volupté, was the result of he wrote that as a result of their affair. So if you want to get a little inside into this, you know, this French affair, check that very old book out. The very old book. Right past that is another monument. There is 107 statues and monuments in the park. And most of these are dedicated to all the creative types, the authors, the artists, people that were a huge impact that left something to the country of France and the world at that point too. So it's really cool to walk through and to see all of them. I love to take people in there and just share all of them with you. And I have definitely seen all of the statues in there at this point a few times, but the park is massive. So if, you know, you want to spend an entire day there, that's probably how you would have to do it to be able to see everything. You know, it's kind of like the Louvre, you know, yeah. You wanted to go walk up and look to spend 10 seconds looking at something, you could probably see it all, you know, within, you know, 7 hours.
Yeah, exactly.
But there is another statue. It's Joie de la Famille by Horace Pavillon. It was done in 1888. It was originally titled Happiness. It was shown at the Salon in 1889 in plaster, and the French state bought it and commissioned it to be done in marble. It was first put in to Versailles into the garden, but then was placed here in 1890. So it is just kind of a lovely little, statue dedicated to the happiness of family.
Oh, that's sweet.
Isn't that sweet? To the left is a really cool building, and it is the Pavillon Davot. It was done in 1867. It's designed by the architect Gabriel Davot, who designed features that you see all over Paris every single day, including the former Trocadero Palace that you spend probably every day of your life at. But the Trocadero Palace that used to be there that is not there anymore. We talked about it when we talked about the Trocadero. I wish it was. It was just amazing Byzantine building. But he designed that. Now it's gone because it was done for the exhibition. He also did the Fontan Saint-Michel. He did the Fountain of the Palm Tree at the Square de Châtelet. He also did all of the original press kiosks and all the benches of Paris. So when you see all those wonderful green benches all over the city, Davio did that.
No way.
Yes. I love it. He worked with Baron Haussmann, of course. He built in 1867. It was the first refreshment stand that was there in the park. Today is part of the beekeeping school and the horticultural school. It holds events and lectures in there, as well as summer art exhibitions by local artists. But I mentioned the beehives, the beekeeping. Just to the right of that is the apiary Rucher. It was created in 1856 by Henri Ramey, and it's one of the oldest in Paris. In 1866, it was removed by Haussmann, but replaced again in 1872 until today. It is one of the oldest beekeeping schools in France and even in Europe. And they still train people there to be beekeepers.
I love that.
Which I don't think I could ever do because I'm always terrified of me to get stung. They always have those white, you know, those big white suits and all of that. But I don't know. I would just think one of them's going to get inside me. But each year in September, they hold the Fête de Mie, and that is when they sell the honey. And it's one weekend. It's basically a Saturday. It's sometimes the same weekend as Patrimoine, but a lot of times it's the weekend after. And I have missed it the last 2 years. You have to get there and line up early. They have a limit of 2 jars per person. And it is like the number one. It's like the biggest thing. So one of these years, next year, I'm going to do it. I'm going to put it on my calendar as soon as I see it and try to get there to get some of the honey that comes from the Jardin de Luxembourg.
I want to have some of that honey too. Let's go line up.
I know, we'll go get some, but you know, in the garden itself, there's also about, there's like 200 different kinds of trees, and they have an orchard that's there on the side, not far from there. That's apple and pear trees. You could walk by and you see all of these. So these are probably, and they don't use pesticides in France. So these bees are probably the happiest bees there are in the world, because there's so many different flowers and plants and everything for them. And I bet that honey tastes delicious.
Oh, I'm sure. And they say the local honey helps protect your immune system better.
Yeah. So I think that's a, like, sometimes I've heard that about with your, with allergies, to have honey from your area.
Yeah.
But then there's also people say it's an old wives' tale, but I don't know. I mean, it doesn't hurt. It doesn't hurt to have the honey. Put it in your tea and see if it works.
Exactly.
Yeah. But right past there is another monument to José María de Heredia. He was a Cuban poet and a man of letters. He was part of the Parnassien group and Guy de Maupassant. So he lived up there at the just very close at Montparnasse, because the garden kind of ends at the edge of the Boulevard Montparnasse. And then also right there, you see the Pétanque players. These are like real hardcore Pétanque players. You don't go strolling in there and smile and say, hey, can you teach me how to play? You better know what you're doing. But they're also really nice. Sometimes it's just fun to go watch them. There are a bunch of these like cute little old guys playing, and you know, they also have their wine, and they each have a little locker to put their Pétanque balls in. And it's actually really fun to go watch, just to sit there, and they take it very seriously. Right there is also a little monument to Chopin by Paul Desbois that was done in 1900. It was debuted on the 50th anniversary of his death on October 17th. The original bust was removed and sent to Poland in 1929, but in 1942, a bronze was recreated and then added there, but then it had been removed and melted down by the Vichy regime. And then later, after the war, the Polish people ended up making another copy and moving it back there.
What? As they should. Yeah.
So it's all, you know, it all comes around. Chopin, of course, we just mentioned him last week about a little bit about Delacroix, because Delacroix painted a painting of him and his partner at the time, Georges Sand. And then when they broke up, they asked Delacroix to cut it in half. So now it's two separate paintings. The Chopin one is in the Louvre, and I'm not sure where the Georges Sand version is, but Georges Sand's also in the park. We'll talk about her a different day. But you'll also come around the corner and you'll recognize someone that doesn't need an introduction. And that is, of course, well, she is known as Liberty Lighting the World. You may know it more as the Statue of Liberty. She was created in 1889. The original that was here was now in the Orsay. That's right there in the entrance when you walk in. This one was moved in 2012. It was given to France by the widow of Bartholdi. And it was given to the Musée de Luxembourg. It was inside there until 1905 when it was placed outside the museum at the park entrance, kind of where we're going to end up the tour, that's right there at the edge of the museum. The tablet on this one, which is different from what you see in New York City, this one says November 15th, 1889. That was the year that she was inaugurated in Paris.
Ah.
So that's when you see it in America, it says July 14th, but in France, it'll say November 15th. Or July 4th. Did I say the 14th? July 4th. and it is next to an American oak that was dedicated to the victims of 9/11. It was a gift from the American community in Paris. And it was planted on January 30th, 2002. But it's, I don't know. I don't think it's does so well in Paris because it doesn't look very good. The last couple of years, it looks like it's barely holding on. So hopefully maybe, you know, maybe they need to take it up and put it in the orangerie and give it a little bit of love. Cause I'm not so sure an American oak does so well in France. But one reason I usually take a lot of people over here to see this is because Mr. Ernest Hemingway loved to come and visit her when she was down closer to the Luxembourg, which was basically right up the street from where he lived with Pauline. And this was when, you know, he was on to his second marriage with Pauline Pfeiffer, and he would go to visit her, visit the Statue of Liberty, kind of like in some people would go visit a favorite saint in a church. I always love to find, you know, Jeanne d'Arc and Genevieve. But he would go there and kind of go there to talk to her, like you would go, you know, pray to a saint and kind of think, maybe I should just give this up and go back to America. And he'd always go by and visit her and talk to her. But that statue, of course, is the one in the Orsay. But, you know, you could go there and do the same thing. Maybe, you know, if you need to, you know, think about, you know, do you want to go back to America? Maybe just go visit the Statue of Liberty and have a chat with her.
Talk to her.
Right around the corner is the monument to Edward Branly. He was a physicist and a professor. He invented and discovered wireless telegraph. So I guess we could thank him for, you know, eventually the internet.
Wait. Really?
The wireless telegraph. So all of those things ended up, you know, that you could have telephones and the internet and everything that we do now wirelessly.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Branly. And then also there's a monument to Paul Verlaine that was done by Auguste Nierhausen Rodeau in 1911. Verlaine was a French poet whose poems were used as clues by the resistance when they read him over the radio. His personal life sort of overshadows this, but most people don't know it, except for I share the story all the time because I love it. Paul Verlaine was a little older, but he ended up in 1871 met a very young Arthur Rimbaud. Rimbaud was a young poet himself. He was a fan of Verlaine's works, and they had a little correspondence back and forth with each other. And Verlaine said, invited him to come up to Paris and said, you should come up here. You know, because there's all of this, you know, there's other writers and other poets, and this would be a great place for you to learn. And so he ended up coming up here. He got off the train. He went to his house. Paul was not there, but Paul's wife was there. And then ended up that he and Paul became very close, so close that they became to have a romantic relationship. They had to leave Paris because at that time homosexuality was not okay. So they ended up leaving. They went up to Brussels. They ran off there. The wife would come after and be like, no way, you're not stealing my husband. I'm taking him. Paul would go back for a little bit. Then he couldn't be apart from Arthur. So he'd end up leaving him and going back. And it was this whole thing back and forth for years of like, you know, you can't live with them. You can't live without them. Aww. And at one point they were in Brussels, and Paul Verlaine at this point was tired of it and thought, I got to get away from this guy. We can't be together. So he ended up buying a gun. Uh-oh. And he ended up shooting him. He shot Rimbaud in the wrist. So he was fine, but he was sent to prison for 2 years. He ended up coming back to Paris, and he moved into an apartment at 39 Rue Descartes in 1896 is where he died. But if you go to that building, you will also see a plaque, because that's the same building that Hemingway rented a teeny, teeny, tiny apartment on the very top floor that just was big enough for a table and a little wood fire. And that's what he would use to write.
I like that that guy was a terrible shot and just shot the guy in the wrist.
Yeah. But I love that story because it was just like, you know, I love any, you know, we love any of those stories that have that, you know, some different version of love. Right around the corner from that is a statue, a monument that always catches everybody's eye. And every time I take people through there, they always are like, what is this? And it's called the Triomphe de Celin. It's by Jules Dallot, who did a lot of amazing different statues and monuments throughout Paris. It is called the Drunken Silence. It is an image that has gone around through centuries. It is a very funny monument because it's this very large gentleman that either looks, he looks like he is very drunk, and there is a donkey. And there's these all these little there's all these little guys that are trying to get him and hoist him up to get onto this donkey, but he looks like he's so drunk that they, you know, he's just like, you know, just a big ball of, you know, fluid movement, and they can't get him up there. He is related to the god Dionysus, who is also, you might know, as Bacchus, who's the god of wine, who's probably the best of all of the gods. But it always catches everybody's attention. So you don't know, it's like, is he really drunk? You look at all these, the people around, they look miserable trying to get him to get up there. But it's very eye-catching. It's rather large and patinaed bronze, but it's a really cool one to see. And there's also a statue, just the head of Beethoven. It's done by Antoine Bourdelle. It was given on the 150th anniversary of the death of Beethoven on March 26, 1827. Bourdelle was obsessed with Beethoven, but Beethoven had that crazy big hair. If you go to the Musée Bourdelle, which is a free museum that's really close to the Gare de Montparnasse, an amazing museum, there is probably 30 versions of the head of Beethoven there. He was obsessed with it. And if you're a sculptor and you see this, you could see why, because I'm sure it was a lot of fun to do. It's really cool to go look in there. The artist's daughter ended up giving it to the city. And we have a person that used to listen. And when we did a lot of our live stuff during COVID, he is the grandson of Bourdelle.
That's so crazy.
And it's so cool because he sends me messages, but you know, and he'll send me like copies, like pictures of letters that his grandfather wrote. So it's really, really cool. But Bourdelle did a lot of really cool stuff. So that's a really great museum to go check out in Paris. It's free because it's part of the City of Paris Museums. Also right there is another one that a lot of people really notice, called Les Four by Pierre Rocher. It was created to be Hercules, to represent one of the 12 labors of Hercules. This one was supposed to clean the stables. Hercules is in bronze on the rocks trying to divert the river Alpheus to clean the stables, which, you know, that sounds like a pretty good idea. He doesn't want to clean it, so let's just divert the water into it. And the water will do it for me. I mean, it's a stable. I wouldn't want to clean it either. Even though I did as a kid when I had a pony, I spent all my time out there cleaning it and hanging out with my pony. It was originally planned to be in the
I lost you.
You know, it'd make a lot of sense if there's water running through it. It was purchased in 1802, and it was decided because of the cost of it to put it in the fountain. It was just decided to stick it here in the ground in the garden instead. It is now kind of just like they probably have to start pruning the foliage around it because the foliage just kind of just creeping in. So it's kind of cool. It kind of looks like this statue that's hidden in this greenery. Right there, you'll see a very tiny bust that's a monument to Stefan Zweig. It was done by Felix Chivot. It was placed there in 2003. Stefan was an Austrian writer. He was one of the most popular in the world in the 1920s and 30s, and his work has been translated into several languages. I know him because he wrote one of the greatest books you could ever read about Marie Antoinette. It was the first time somebody wrote a book about her that was basically not just blaming her for everything. And also because she ended up becoming the scapegoat for a lot of stuff. And so he wrote this book about her that basically gave a whole other side to who she was in her life. It's really fantastic. But he's also written ones about Mary Stuart, Queen of Scots, and also Paul Verlaine.
I want to read it. I haven't read that one.
I know. But right there on the corner is another building that is the Orangerie. And the Orangerie is just a term that you will hear because there's the Musée de l'Orangerie in the Tuileries. There's also a L'Orangerie in Versailles. And it was Orangerie is basically what it sounds like. It was a place that they would put the orange trees because back then, you know, you didn't have orange trees growing up here as far north as Paris. So it was, you know, more, you know, Spain and southern part of Europe. And so if a, you know, the king has an orangerie and he could be like, well, I have my own oranges and lemons, you know, so it was quite prestigious to be like, well, how can you have oranges? They don't grow there. And it's like, oh, I have a special building for them. So they have an orangerie. It's still used for that today. So if you go there right now, because it's a winter and it's cold, this is where they keep all the trees that are in the great big amazing boxes that you could find all over the garden. They put those in there. So there are, you know, a million different kinds of trees in there. There are orange trees, pomegranates, palm trees, all of those. And every year in October, it's always sad when you start to see them getting picked up to be taken away. But then it's always, you're always so happy in March when they start to come out. But in the off season, in the, when they're all out in the garden, they use this space to put, do smaller current, artists, and they're all like local artists. It's not like some major artist, but there's, sometimes you can find some kind of cool things in there. If you pop, you know, walking by, pop in there and look. But what's on the building is also what I love, because if you look up around the top are the busts of 12 different artists. And you guessed it. I'm sure you know which one of them is going to be up there as well. It was added in 1888. And of those, you have Jean-Antoine Houdin, who was a sculptor of the Enlightenment. He is there. You also have Jacques-Louis David, who painted, you know, he's very well known for painting the Sacre de Napoleon and doing all of those great pieces for Napoleon and also the neoclassical master. Antoine Jean Gros is another neoclassical favorite of Napoleon. His bust is up there. There is, of course, François Rude, who was a sculptor of that period. There's Pierre Proudhon, who was a romantic artist and a favorite of Napoleon. So this is done in 1888. So a lot of this is all around that period of time. And then David Danger, who was also a sculptor. He studied under David. You have Ingres there, who is also a student of David. Pradier, who was a sculptor. He is the one that did some of the statues in the Place de la Concorde, including the one of Juliette Drouet, who was, it would go on being the mistress of over 40 years of Hugo. And then, of course, there's Delacroix. And so this whole, you know, the garden, you have many sightings of Delacroix around here. There's also Antoine Barre, who is a good friend of Delacroix, who were the two that Barre did amazing sculptures of animals, some of which are on the outside of the Louvre. There's a bunch of his pieces inside the Louvre. But he and Delacroix used to go to the Jardin des Plantes and sit there at the zoo, the oldest zoo in Europe, and study the animals. And that's why they were so good at painting them, because they would study them, watch their movement, do sketches of them. And so Barre is fantastic. There's also Thierry Rousseau, who was also a romantic painter. Jean-François Millet, who was under the Barbizon School that was out there at Fontainebleau. So you could look up. Sometimes they're kind of hidden around the corner, but I always love to go see those. And then we'll go just a few steps further and we'll end talking about, of course, again, Delacroix. Because
you love him.
Yeah. This is, we're just going to change this to Paris History of Becca Hemingway, all about Delacroix.
I think it's a great idea.
Yeah. But there is a statue there, a monument of dedicated to Delacroix, done by Jules Dallot, and was done in 1880, 17 years after his death. The money was raised and commissioned by his adoring fans. It was commissioned for Dallot to do it, to create this monument. It was inaugurated on October 5th, 1890. The bronze bust of him on the very top is at the very top with his, you know, it looks like he has a scarf kind of thrown back. Below it, there are three allegories. Time is With the wings, time is always depicted as an older man. He's wings, and he's lifting up the allegory of glory, who is basically reaching up to put a palm frond in front of him as like, you know, as a gesture of, you know, thank you, monsieur. And then below that, there's the allegory of the arts, who's looking up at him, clapping as she's placing that flower there. And it's a lovely little fountain. It's just kind of there off to the corner. On the other side of that fence, what you don't see is the Petit Luxembourg, which is where the leader of the Senate lives, and was part of the old Palais de Luxembourg, which was created by Marie de Medici. But these things are here because we are so close as well to the Musée Delacroix and also to Saint-Sulpice. So this whole area, last week we talked about the Musée Delacroix. And today we are just right there on the edge. If you walk a little bit, you could just see and look up. You see the towers of Saint-Sulpice. So this is, it's really great because so much of this is dedicated to Delacroix, who made a lot of that his home. The biggest thing about Delacroix and why he is in Saint-Sulpice is because when he was alive, you know, this was, the Louvre was open in 1792, but there wasn't the museums and galleries that we have today, or even that they, you know, those things started popping up in the 19th century. So he really believed that to be remembered as an artist was to put big, large scale paintings in public spaces. So that's why there's three churches in Paris that you could find Delacroix. You could find him in government buildings. A lot of those, sadly, you can't go into now except for that weekend in September. But, you know, the Hotel de Ville before it burned, we had a bunch of Delacroix in there. But the Palais Bourbon and the Senate that's right there, so many buildings have Delacroix. And he really urged other artists to do that so you could be remembered. And it's really great because now you could go and see, you know, Delacroix in these places for free.
Smart guy.
He was a very smart, handsome fella.
We love him.
I love him.
Much. Well, that concludes the first segment of our visit to the Luxembourg Gardens. Make sure you tune in next week as we continue our journey around the garden and check out Claudine's website, claudinehemingway.com.
Thanks for listening today, guys. If you're interested in learning more about Claudine, her tours, history, and the beautiful photographs that she posts all over Instagram, tune into her website, claudinehemingway.com.